everyone, and welcome back to the Hog Pod. I hope that you're all getting some miles under your belt for 2024 and enjoying being back out on your Harley Davidson. Tell me this, have you ever ridden the Wild Atlantic Way on the west coast of Ireland? Despite my Yorkshire accent, I've lived in Belfast for nearly 20 years, but I still haven't made the ride. And for the many that do each year, they're treated to some of the most stunning riding that Ireland has to offer. If you've been to Bikefest in Killarney, then you would have been blown away by the stunning vistas across the Ring of Kerry and around the Dingle Peninsula. If you've ever been to the Hog and Bog Rally, laid on by the Belfast chapter, recently voted as the most epic rally in 2023, because I like to keep mentioning that, then you would definitely would have enjoyed the beauty of County Down. Now, the Geordie chapter, led by Director Alan, is planning on combining all of the above and more by circumnavigating the island of Ireland with fellow chapter members later on this year. Knowing the roads as I do, it's a fair challenge to take on. And of course, there's a reason for doing this. Former Big Brother winner Anthony Hutton, who heads up the Never Throw the Towel In project, have joined forces in an attempt to raise awareness to break the stigma and I'll help men open up about their demons to try and reduce, help and prevent suicide. And as the project tagline reads, keep on living. And tonight we're joined by both Alan and Anthony to tell us a little bit more about how they came together and what's in store. So welcome, Alan, and welcome, Anthony.
Hi, Kenny. Thanks for the invite.
Hello, gentlemen. And like I touched on before, pleasure to be here. Really appreciate you getting me on here.
I want to start with yourself, if I can, Alan. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, your chapter, and you know your background in biking? And
I'm Alan Glasper, director of the Geordie chapter up in Gateshead Harley Davidson, or Iron City Motorcycles as they go by now. I took over from Barry Gillespie 2 years. This is my 3rd year as director. Joined the chapter in 2003, joined Hog in 2002 when I bought my first new bike. I had Harleys before that. And literally, yeah, been skint ever since, basically.
Yes, money, as they say, yeah. Were you always involved in Harley, or have you? Did you ride other bikes before?
I rode sports bikes. I passed my test when I was 17. Used the bike every day. I started off the first bike after I passed my test was a 350 LC.
The RD.
I was a two-stroke boy. There's quite a few of us in the town of Spennymoor had them. I think at one point it was something like 20-odd lads had bikes like that. So it was a race everywhere we used to go to. So, yeah. And then moved up to larger bikes, 600 Honda, Yamahas, etc. And then Christian come along, his son come along. He was born. And I thought, if I don't get rid of these bikes, I'm not going to see him grow up. Mm-hmm. So sold the bike briefly. And then one day the ex-wife said, you're going to have to get another bike. I was like, really? She was like, oh, you're doing me head in. It's every time a bike goes past, you up and looking.
You're breaking your neck to look at it.
Yeah. So, and it was funny because one day I was working on a roof and there was a lad rode past on a sports there and he spotted me, turned around, come back down. And it was a friend who I hadn't seen for a few years, a lad called Graham Sawley. And we got talking. And I asked him where he bought the Harley from. And he said it was just Harleys in Newcastle. So I packed up the tools, jumped in the van, and we went up to Just Harley's and ended up purchasing a bike. So
just like that.
Just like that.
You're obviously working going, do you know what? I have too much money here. So
yeah. I used to make money in them days, not so much now. But it was funny because we worked over in Seville in 1992. And we used to travel down to Portugal on a weekend and have a weekend on the bay down there to break it up. And there was an old boy always used to hear him come down into the village on the morning, pick up his paper, and he used to sit and have a coffee. And the Harley he was riding was a lovely old shovel head. And I was saying to the lads, I was going, oh, it's beautiful. I've been at the Harleys from being a young age, really. But the first bike I saw when we walked into Just Harleys was literally a Shovelhead Custom. And it was, you could have sworn it was the same bike that this old boy had been riding. And that was the one that I bought.
Ah, that was a sign, if there was ever a sign. Oh,
yeah, it's beautiful. But that was the downfall.
Yeah.
And it just progressed from there. After that, I bought a 100th anniversary Fat Boy. Oddly enough, I've still got a 20-year-old 100th anniversary Fat Boy in the garage in the same colours, black and silver. And then it just went on from there. We started touring. We went down to the 100th anniversary rally in Barcelona, rode down there, and then been away every year since. So done most of the European rallies, etc.
Yeah. Were you at Budapest last year?
Yes, went to Budapest. It was great. I think there was 10 or 11 bikes went over. We had two female riders with us, and the rest of the lads had never rode abroad before. So we did all the usual passes down through Austria, Germany, Switzerland, etc. And although I've done them for many years with other people, every day was like Christmas Day to these lads. Every morning they were up. It was like, where are we going today? What are we doing today? Which pass are we doing today?
Yeah.
And, it was brilliant. It was one of the best trips I'd ever done because it was like you say, it was like Christmas Day every morning for these. And just seeing the smiles on the face when we were leading it, it was, yeah. And it was absolutely fantastic rally as well. I put it on par with Prague, the one that we attended in Prague a couple of years earlier.
Geordie chapter, tell us a little bit about the Geordie chapter. How you're faring these days? I know that you recently moved your rally to every other year, but apart from that, that's pretty much all I know about your chapter, obviously, and you. But
Geordie chapter, so it started in 1997. Dale Robinson opened Just Harleys up. A few lads got together. I think it was three or four founder members of the Geordie chapter. We've still got three of them in there as well, who were founder members. And it was, like I said, it was our 25th anniversary a couple of years ago. So we honoured them with a plaque for the long-standing members and being founder members. A regular is Frank Goodall, who attends most rides when he can. And in fact, he's actually doing the ride around Ireland with us this year as well. So looking forward to that. He's a proper character, he's Frank. Once met, you'll never forget him. Yeah, and so that's how the Geordie chapter started. We had a few directors in the past. Dave Badcock, Julie Horsfield was my other directors. We had another one, Chris Williamouth. She was director for a short period of time. I think she left through ill health. Greg Holmes for a short time, he was director as well. And then we had Barry Gillespie, who, to be fair to Barry, he took the chapter over at a difficult time when the dealership changed hands to Newcastle Harley Davidson. That was when I left working there. And Barry ran it from, I think it was 2013, right the way up. And he actually managed to take us through COVID and keeping the chapter together through online Zoom calls, etc. We did events, quizzes, etc. What everybody did really during Zoom. He did a great job of keeping the chapter together. Yeah, and then Barry was talking of stepping down, and he was looking for an assistant director and. Was never something I'd ever thought I'd put my name to. But after speaking with Bert Purry, he was my manager when I worked at Just Harleys, and he was an advisor to Sahil when Sahil took on the dealership. Decided to put my name forward and ended up getting the position. Then after,
and then here you are now.
Yeah. After a while, Barry stepped down. Not everybody's agreement, but you know, things happened behind the scenes, etc., which you don't really want to go into. It was personal with Barry, and yeah, so I was thrown in the limelight on the morning of the Heart and Soul. It was like, "Sure, Rally, now you sort it out." I was like, "Okay."
Baptism of fire.
Yeah.
And membership wise, how are you getting on? Have you sort of regular numbers, i.e. the same numbers before COVID, or were you hit hard?
No, we've always had good membership. We've got a fantastic committee, and membership officer is absolute star. She chases people up. Last year we hit, I think we ended on 309 members. And we've just had our membership renewals come in beginning of this month, and I think we're up to 240 already. So the good thing is we're getting repeat new members as well. So people who joined last year have rejoined. So from 2022 to 2023, we retained 74 new members, which is, you know, pretty good.
Yeah, that's good. So there's something right happening up there anyway.
Yeah, we have full list of events. We did last year, we did 27 rides, official rides. We do a Wednesday night ride out. We always get anywhere between 20, 25, 35 lad people turn up for their Wednesday night ride, which is just an hour and a half ride out, and then, you know, back to a pub for a social drink before we go on our way. Yeah, do quite a bit. It's a full calendar.
Yeah. So are you going to, I'm going to say Italy this year, because I can't pronounce Senegalia.
Senegalia, yeah. Yes, so we're doing that. I'm going to do it a different route. I think there's only a couple of us maybe riding around this year. There's quite a few chapter members going over there, all taking different routes. Hopefully we'll all meet up when we get there. But I plan on riding down the west coast of France, down to across the Pyrenees, and then doing the Coast Road, Saint-Tropez, Nice, etc., and up to, like, across the French Riviera, up into Italy, down further down, and then across to Senegalia.
Anthony, welcome to the Hog Pod. Thanks very much for taking a bit of time out to join us. I want to ask you a little bit about yourself before I start to sort of join the two stories here together. So, of course, we know you were involved in Big Brother and you won it in 2005. But tell us about Anthony.
This is a little bit of a different kind of vibe to the normal podcasts that I've been doing previously. So my name's Anthony Hutton. Like you touched on, background, I won Big Brother. If anyone does know me, normally tends to be from my Big Brother background. I am a barber for a living, so I cut hair and talk shit for a living to men, which is one of the reasons, one of the big factors why I set up the Never Throw in the Towel project. So I'm the founder of the Never Throw in the Towel project, which is a mission to try and tackle and fight against this awful problem that we have with male suicide. Aim of the project is to build a culture, community and brotherhood for men to talk more. And that's pretty much me.
I'm sure you've had some ride since 2005. And how are you enjoying normal life, as I would probably see normal life? Just, you know, regular job, you know, something different to all of the mayhem, which I'm sure followed after the win in 2005.
I think for me, life's a journey, isn't it? I think, you know, when I look back in me 20s, me young 20s, you know, the only thing that appealed me was going on the drink and women. And I think, you know, you're always, your personality doesn't really change. I've found that through.
Alan's smiling there because he's probably 50 or going, I still think the same.
I'm 60 this year and I still think the same.
I think that, you know, fundamentally, pretty much that same young lad is always in you. What you learn is purely based from experience, making mistakes. I always call the mistakes lessons. And today now I'm a family man. I've got my dog, my 2-year-old son who I've just seen off to bed. My missus is we're having another little one. She's 24 weeks pregnant on Saturday.
And oh, congratulations.
Yeah, and everything's about family now, and me chilling on a Saturday watching TV is my ideal Saturday night. So I absolutely love my life as now, but it's all about a journey for me.
Do you have a motorcycle license, Anthony? Do you ride bikes at all or anything like that?
You know what? Every single holiday,
I feel a no coming on.
Every single lad's holiday, I always get a moped.
Aye, yeah.
Right? I absolutely love it. And I have got a wild side to me. Like, I've skydived, I've touched on before that I like boxing. I love adrenaline fueled things. I've flirted with getting a bike so much, and it's my wife that kind of has stopped me fundamentally. And I think I'd probably crash. And so no, I haven't got a bike, but I've often flirted with it.
I'm sure Alan will agree, for anyone sort of struggling, motorcycles is absolute medicine, isn't it, Al? It opens up, and particularly with the way that we ride, we ride in big groups. We're involved in a international motorcycle riding club, group. And you're surrounded by mates, but you're totally alone with your thoughts, and it's a real magical medicine. On that, Alan, I know that you've got involved with a number of sort of different rides to raise awareness, etc. And this is how you and Anthony have crossed paths, isn't it? Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
We're all members of Harley Owners Group, which is HOG. In the UK, we've got, I believe, circa 16,000 members. So in 2020... I was talking with the then director, Barry Gillespie, who we were looking to put something together to get more men involved in talking together, riding together, etc. We felt there were certain dynamics within the chapter that was drifting apart. So we come up with the idea of organising a ride from Land's End to John O'Groats. And while talking to Barry, He told me he'd had his results back from prostate cancer, and luckily he was starting to clear up, and he was on the good side of it. There was a few other lads who was within the chapter, lads who I've known for years, who were going through treatment at that time, which had never told anybody, which hadn't spoken, they hadn't spoken to anybody about it, and this is how we come up with what we call the Bob Ride. So the little prostrate man, the little badge that they have on, we had some of them at one of the meetings raising money for Prostate Cancer UK. And I was talking to a few of the lads, and we named him Bob. And this is where the Bob Ride come from, and it was Bond of Brothers. So that's what we call it. So we did in 2020, we had to cancel it because of lockdown at one point, but just as we were coming out of lockdown, we managed to get it done. So we did Land's End to John O'Groats literally twice over 3.5 days, which was like 1,750 miles. A lot of people, I know people have cycled it, I know people have run it, and like, hats off to them, because even on a motorbike, it's boring, it's like long roads, long days, but it's an iconic thing to do in the UK. So that was 2020. 2022, we decided that we would do another run. And this time it was for dementia. And it was for a local charity in Corbridge, in Hexham Corbridge. And we did the full course line of Wales again. People were like, oh, the lads is on a jolly ride out. Believe me, the riding that we do, it is enjoyable, but it's not enjoyable. It's hard work. It's long days in the saddle. Some days we were out at 6 a.m, side stands up, and we weren't getting back until 7, 8 o'clock at night. And there was, over them 3 days, we did something in the region. I think it was about 1,600 miles that we did. And it's hard work because the old back roads, old B roads, you know, they're not a great deal of long straight roads to clock the miles up. So that was UK. So that was England and Scotland. We done Wales. So the only one left to do was Ireland. So we always wanted to do something for men's mental health. We lost one of our members to suicide, only a young lad in his early 20s, a few years ago. His father's still in the chapter, and it's absolutely heartbreaking when we talk about him. So that was one of the reasons why we're doing this ride. And we were talking about it one day, and as your phones listen to you, something popped up on my Facebook page, and it was Never Throw in the Towel. Recognised Anthony, and I knew he was a local lad anyway. I think he's only about 8 miles or so away from me. And I messaged him one night on Facebook, and I just says, you know, this is something that we're looking to get on board with. I told him what we do. We look for like a local charity or a cause, something that we can maybe promote with these rides. And as he does, he rang me first thing in the morning about 6:45, I think it was. I'm like, what? Well, he wakes me up every morning now with his cold water baths. Do you know what I mean? It's whatever time. So we spoke and I outlined what it was that we were looking to do. But as we've both got busy schedules at the moment, we've never actually managed to meet up. We spoke a couple of times on the phone, etc. So, you know, for this year's ride, we've got 20 rides, like I say, up to now to take part. We've got all the itinerary more or less nailed down. We're looking to do the ride in September. We've had to put it back a while. The initial ride was going to be July. We're going to do it back end of September now. And, hopefully we will raise lots of awareness, which I think we will, with like yourself and Anthony on board with this. And it's never been about raising money for me on any of the projects. It's always about raising awareness. I think awareness has more value than any money can be given, you know. But yes. And like what Anthony's doing, getting lads talking. I think when we first spoke, he said he'll be able to tell you better. I think the first meeting, you only had a handful of people turn up. When you watch his videos now, you know, he's like 30, 50, whatever amount of people are turning up. He'll be able to give you the exact figures.
The last video I watched of you, Anthony, you were having to shout, "We've got an army," because you had a absolutely, just a wash of men in front of you. Before we move on to the men bit, I have to say, fair play to you. I watched one of you encouraging about 30 women to scream and shout at you as well, where, you know, most of us are trying to encourage one not to. So yeah, fair enough. So obviously, the Never Throw Your Towel In project, I gather it's come about as a result of your own journey. Okay. I've listened to you in other interviews and, you know, previous write-ups, etc., that you struggled yourself when you came out of the wake of the Big Brother sort of world. Are you comfortable to sort of tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, Yeah, absolutely. I am now anyway. I certainly never used to be. Yeah, so it just it originally comes from my experience from when I won Big Brother, and I always touch on this, and it was such an extreme taste of fame what I experienced, because I was a young lad who lived with my grandma and granddad and my mum. And I was always the baby of the family. So I was like, I couldn't wash, iron, cook or do anything. I didn't even pay board. I was like really mollycoddled. And then so I moved out to grandma's house, straight into the Big Brother house. And then, you know, I was on there for nearly 3 months, 79 days, I think I was in that house, cooked up. So then when I came out the house, you know, everyone known me name. I just won £50,000 for winning Big Brother, and then the next day I'd picked up £200,000, and it was a huge wallop of fame. And you know, in a nutshell, I kind of just thought that was going to continue, but slowly but surely it year after year, it dwindled to the point where it looked like I basically had to get a job, and that petrified me, you know, me ego, pride, paranoia. I thought I would get laughed at if I got a normal job, because for such a long period of time I was known as Anthony from Big Brother. So from then it started just getting worse and worse. I ended up, I turned to alcohol and drugs. And I'd missed 5 mortgage payments. And I basically was on regular, every day I was having passive suicidal thoughts. It got to its worst where I'd actually been like on a, I'd been on a 3-day bender with no sleep, no change of clothes, no nothing. I was constantly just wanting to be intoxicated, so I didn't have to think of how I was really feeling. But then when that came to an end, and you had the drugs, the alcohol combined with feeling like a complete loser, after that moment there was a moment where I was literally actively, there's two types of suicide. I've done a lot of research now. There's passive suicidal thoughts where I was having on a daily basis, where I was just thinking, I don't want to be here. I always used to look at the switch, the light switch, and I would always look at it and say, if someone could press it, I would please press it, and I don't want to be here. But then you've got active when you're actually planning, and that's when I was actually trying to plan it. That's when I, luckily enough, the like days after I had the self awareness where I thought, I have to tell someone. I have to talk. I'm gonna have to tell someone. But for so long, I was so embarrassed, and you know, I'm someone who's always wanted to be the man. You know, I've always maybe been the loud one in the group. So with that combined of just feeling like a loser, not wanting to get into a job, the pressure of. You know, getting back into a normal job. But once I spoke and told my mum and grandma, and then I went and seen a professional, it was one of the best things I could do. And then for so long, it's a little bit of a long-winded story, but I'll share it with you. So once I kind of got a normal job and was a barber, I'd kind of like, that was a huge step, because I had some normality now and I had some routine. But I always kind of like, and I moved area because I had to get away from this crowd that was doing drugs and I had to move away. I had to have a fresh start. So once I'd done that, my life started to go like that, and just I started feeling a lot better. But because I was a barber, men started to open up to me, and that's when I kind of like it actually gave me the nudge to, you know what, I'm actually going to share my experience, because I feel as if I can help here, because I've actually been down that, trust me, I've been down that path before. So that's when I basically started, like, there was a couple of guys who I'd actually helped, and there was one lad in particular, a young lad, who he turned up in my house at about half three on the early hours Sunday morning, and he was actively thinking about killing himself, and he didn't want to tell his friends, and he didn't have a close family unit to go to, and he found his barber, the person to come to. So me and my wife actually, we took him in, we took him to go and see professional help, and we ended up staying at our house for a number of nights till he was safe enough. And it was kind of like, it really kind of hit me hard, where it was like fucking hell, this role as a barber is just so much more than cutting hair. It's like I'm almost a poor man's therapist. But I've got so much empathy and want to help so much, it's because I've been there. I've been in that place, and I know how bad it can be. And then the third story, which is kind of like, which blows me away really. So the project's called Never Throw in the Towel, and the strap line of the project is Keep on Living. And they were the words that I used right at the end of my grandma's eulogy when she passed away. And after the funeral, outside the church, a gentleman came up to me, and he was crying, and he thanked me for the eulogy, and he told me my grandma was an amazing woman. And but I felt there was something deep coming from him when he spoke to us. And anyway, on the night I was staying with my mum on that night, and I had a message come through, and it was the same gentleman. And he sent me this huge long message sharing with me that he'd been massively suffering with his mental health, and he's been feeling suicidal. But the words have jumped out at him that I spoke about my grandma, the words never throw in the towel, have made him want to keep on living. And that, after all of the experiences that I've had, and then touched by something like that, it really highlighted the power of words, the power of a story. And I just thought, you know what, I'm actually just going to start speaking on this subject, and I'm going to start talking, because if I can help someone unknowingly, but it showed me the power of words. So I just basically, I Googled how to be a guest speaker, and eventually I got an opportunity to talk at a speaking event. And then they asked me, what do you want to call the talk? And the first things that came into my head was never throw in the towel. And from then it's just organically, naturally snowballed. And then I said, when it's Movember, I always do something for November, Movember being a barber. And last Movember, I decided to do a little mini retreat where I took lads out for free, where we went on a walk, we'd done some boxing, a little bit of sparring, breath work, and then we had a cold water dip. And there was only nine men turned up. And to be honest, I thought, oh, this isn't, it wasn't a great turnout. And it was a little bit like, fucking hell, is this a good idea? But
well, given that you were doing it for free, I suppose you didn't want 50 showing up at that point.
No, it was never that. It was the plan was just a one-off. But then we all done it, and we were in a little mini WhatsApp group, and we were like, that was absolutely class. When's the next one? And I was like, that was so good. And then luckily enough, what one of the guys that attended, he's quite good with social media. So he filmed quite a lot of the content. And then we got some of it out on social media. And then the next one was 31 guys. And then it was like, wow, this has jumped up. And then the next one, ITV, 72 blokes on there, the third one we've done. And it's just went from there, really. It's a fantastic journey. I think it's the message is huge, the problem's huge. So yeah, that's my story.
Certainly within our world, I'm sure. I mean, well, Alan has already said there's probably not one of us that, in fact, just generally in life, there's not one of us that doesn't know someone that's had been affected or has we've actually lost.
Just going back to what Anthony's saying there, and it's when you become a barber, when you had lads sitting in the chair to get it's like being a dentist to get somebody to come and see you on a regular basis. They've got to trust you, and obviously they trust you as a barber. You know, and that's why they stick with the same barber for years on end. Very rare man will change his barber throughout his lifetime. You know what I mean? So they obviously felt comfortable enough to start opening up to you. And it's a similar role to what I'm in now with the directorship, because I've got ex-military lads in our chapter who suffer from obviously PTSD, you know, anxiety issues, etc. And some of these lads are big, strong lads as well. And I'll take calls at any time, no matter what time, the day, night, whatever. Whatever I'm doing, I'll stop what I'm doing and listen to these lads. Sometimes I'm on the phone for over 3.5 hours just talking or listening. Do you know what I mean? And it's a similar sort of thing. When you look at us, I've never met Anthony in person, but when you look at us, I don't look the most approachable man. But when you get people like this coming to you and it's literally there in your hands, and these are big, strong lads who are saying all sorts of action, this, that, and the other, you know what I mean? But when you listen to them, they just need help. They just need to offload. They need to talk. And that's what I admire what you're doing. You know, so
there's definitely been a shift, hasn't there? And I say recently, I don't mean in the last days, weeks, months. I mean, we're coming into a new way of thinking, aren't we, as men, especially the younger generation of men, where I think they are more willing to talk. But that doesn't mean that we should take for granted that they are going to come and talk, and you know, because we're still losing, you know, young fellas and young girls to suicide.
You know what, though, it's I think that I think we're becoming more educated, right? But you know what, I think actually the youth, though, I think they have more obstacles as well, though, with social media. The youth have this huge shop window now of comparison, a huge shop window of comparison, and the statistics are so bad for the youth, and obviously COVID as well, that played a huge part, and I agree, it is getting better. I think we're definitely becoming more knowledgeable on talking. I mean, the main message for the project, the main message is talking is a strength, not a weakness. And we really, really try to spread that message. But I think the youth of today really, really do have it hard as well. Like, people working from home as well. A lot of the blokes on the project, right? Like some of them, you know, I would say probably most of the blokes, they don't necessarily have anything like wrong, they're not like really struggling, but they don't do that much outside of they don't get out that much. They work from home and they don't have that much interaction with other men. So I think absolutely we are kind of like educating ourselves with talking and knowledgeable on tools, but on the flip side, we actually still have a lot of kind of like this in this modern day world we live in. There's a lot of things that are affecting our mental health.
totally agree. There is, and it is a changing world, and Kenny touched on it earlier on. When I was going through my anxiety or, you know, depression, whatever you want to call it, once I put that helmet on and start that bike, it literally disappeared. Yeah, and it was, and I would love to say to everybody who's suffering at some point, buy a motorbike. It can be the best thing, because you haven't got time, and you haven't got time to think about it. It just drifts away. And the majority of the lads who you talk to, even the women that you talk to nowadays as well, you know, it's such a stress reliever, you know, and especially when you're riding in a group, like Kenny says, and you ride for a couple of hours, you stop, you meet up for coffee, whatever. I mean, we meet up with groups all over the country, and I've got a few different lads this time on the ride with us as well. People who I know, it means a lot to them because they've gone through it as well, and that's why I've allowed them on this ride. Where once off it was just our chapter that would do it. So I've got other lads from other chapters who's doing it now. I said I would never ever turn anybody away from it. But you would, once over, you would have to be part of our chapter. But now it's just like wide open, because it is it's a growing problem. You know, and it's like you say, people are starting to talk about it more now. And
yeah, no, it's a tricky one, right? So I do a lot of speaking at events. I do them all over, and I always open the question out to the audience. If it's females and it's males, and I always say, this is just for the females. Hands up if you've felt depressed, if you've been in a dark headspace, if you felt anxious, hands up. Who put your hands up if you've spoke to someone? And all the women put their hands up every time. And when I open that question up to the blokes, you don't get the same answer. It's honestly that when I do that, right, you see why the statistics are 3/4 of reported suicide are male. And it's just like, whoa, like we have to. And we are getting better, but honestly, especially in the Northeast, the worst region in the UK for suicide. And again, it's because we're it's just of a, you know, man's man, man of the house, alpha male, all these things integrated in our vocabulary, in our society, of that mentality, especially the Northeast, and it's right throughout. But it's still significantly lopsided in terms of the talking aspect.
Also, we're talking about raising awareness and how we can do that. Alan, you have a ride around doing a circumnavigation of Ireland to obviously raise awareness specifically about this project that Anthony has. I know the roads over here because I've lived here for the last 20 years. And you were talking earlier about it not being a jolly. I can absolutely assure you this isn't going to be no jolly for you. But tell us a little bit about the trip. I know, I think you're doing it clockwise, aren't you? But that's literally all I know.
Yeah, so we leave in Newcastle 3 a.m. in the morning to head towards Stranraer to jump on the ferry. A couple of hours on the ferry, so we'll get some rest then, and then we're heading south down to Waterford, staying overnight in Waterford, which I believe it's about 175 miles from the port in Northern Ireland down into Waterford. Like you say, we're going clockwise.
About 600 days in a car.
600 days. So the next day, we're riding from Waterford up to Letterkenny, which is up the west coast of Ireland. We plan on doing as many coastal routes as possible, obviously dependent on time, traffic, etc. But it's going to be a long day in the saddle, that one, isn't it? Like I said earlier, people think we're going out for a jolly. Believe me, these rides aren't a jolly. As much as I enjoy them, 11, 12, 13 hours in the saddle is not an enjoyable ride. But the reason why we do it like that is because the people who are going through what we're doing these rides for are suffering, you know, and it's, we want to, like, you know, we want to be there with them to what they're going through.
Nothing bonds men tighter than facing adversity. You know, it's most prevalent, most obvious in the military. You can see why these people bond, particularly those that have seen action. And, you know, it's that adversity. As you say, if you were, you know, you can do the Wild Atlantic Way and you could do it over a couple of weeks. But that is, you know, that's a jolly, you know. You're doing it in how many days?
Three. So we will, so we'll be going some. Like I said, I enjoy the rides, and the biggest part I enjoy, because the first ride that we did, the Land's End John O'Groats, and we rode from obviously Newcastle down to Land's End. I know you spoke with Moggy earlier on, Jill Mogg from Bridgewater. I was a Bridgewater member, partner, lived down that area. So I joined the Bridgewater chapter, friends with a great bunch of people down there. They're one of the cafes that we stopped on the way back up. They put on refreshments for us and everything. Great turnout by Bridgewater, Lisa, Maggie, Jill, Barry and all them. And they supported us. Manchester, Dino supported us. Unbelievable with the amount of stuff that he did for us on Bob Rides as well. And
are you guys still fighting with the stickers?
I'm not.
Oh, it's not me. It's him.
I've given up. Just can't.
Anthony, Anthony on that one there. Basically, the Geordie chapter and the Manchester chapter were having a war of stickers. So they basically try and slap stickers on property that wasn't theirs. It was a tit for tat, and it's all brotherly love. But I just wondered if it was still going on.
It'll always go on, should we say. The most enjoyable part I found on the night we did up to John O'Groats and then back down to Edinburgh, sat in the pub, and it was a long, hard day. I think we did something like 650-odd mile on that day. I sat back in the pub, and all the lads were talking, and there were lads who hadn't spoken with each other before. So and I just thought, this is what it's about. They're all sitting there talking about the day's ride. Not one of them complained. Not one of them twisted on, do you know what I mean? And they've been through hell, is basically, you know. And some of these lads are getting on. Some of these lads are nearly 70-year-old, you know. So and we've got two who's with us this time. We did it last year. The last time we did it, Freddie and Keith. Two old boys, great crack, proper old time rockers. If there's a party on there, I'm dancing. You know, they were down at Fields of Thunder when we were down there. Freddie had a broken leg, I think, at the time, but he was still up there dancing with his stick. But you just kind of knock these lads down. And I know he won't mind me saying this, but Freddie struggles really bad with it. And he's the first one to sign up. Yeah, it means that much to these people. So, yeah, looking forward to doing the ride, getting it out there, raising awareness for Anthony's project, and let's see what we can do with it. Definitely.
For those watching this throughout the entire episode, right across the bottom of the screen, you'll be getting you would have been seeing the links to the Geordie chapter website. Certainly links into everything to do with what Anthony's doing. If you're listening to this on Apple and Spotify, then in the description and the show notes, you'll find all the links that we're talking about. And gentlemen, I want to thank you for your time, Anthony. I'm sure this has probably been a different experience to most of the interviews, because the line of questioning is completely different. And I hope that that's been okay for you, because, you know, I think, you know, particularly people like yourself that have, you know, been to the top and then, I'm not going to use the word fallen down, gone to the top and then come back to reality. It's when everyday blokes are seeing people like yourself who have bounced back and reemerged from it stronger and better and more able. It gives inspiration to people.
Yeah. Yeah, there's just one more thing. So We obviously do the free retreats, but so we've got a Never Throw in the Towel Project Facebook members group, which is free, and it's all about, you know, we have Motivation Monday. It's all about positivity, sharing your wins, sharing your losses, tips on mindset, tips on, you know, just getting your steps in, exercise, nutrition, cold water stuff, just a community where men can kind of talk and share the stories and stuff, and we're already building that. So if anyone just wants to get involved and be in the Facebook members group, just please just go on Facebook and give us a look up. It's Never Throw in the Towel Project.
Okay. Again, if you're listening to this or whether you're watching it, there will be links to all of what we've discussed here today. So I'll make sure that they're in there, and I'll include that link because I know the link that you're talking about there, Anthony. I know it's a private group because it's yours, but presumably anyone can ask to be part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Obviously, Anthony, nice to meet you. It's great to hear about the baby coming. Once you've had that one, get yourself a TV, all right? And just
or a bike.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And Alan, great to see you again. Thanks for taking the time, sharing the story. And gentlemen, best of luck.
Thanks, Gary.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you.